Department of Minerals and Energy. The committee staff, our chair, these days we must be careful whether the guests are invited or not. Let's just say it's our guest, so that we are not in trouble. Honorable members, you will recall that, that's why I have to start on time. You will recall that in part of our last discussion, we received the private members' bill by Honorable Mazoni, who did come to present to the committee. And we then allowed at that time the department said he'd have to study more. They will come back and we set up the date, which is today. So that is the main purpose that we are here today. But we will also share. Okay, having said so, honorable members, are there any apologies? That's why you are starting.
Good morning, members and the guests. I've got apologies from Ms. Mgweba and Ms. Sonyane's position.
Okay. Honorable members, I've spoken to the DG, I'm sure. Oh, to the DGs. I said that department. There's talks of Tabayan Paganyet. There's some talk of Paganyet. It's one of the departments that has got two accounting officers. So now I must be careful when I say the DG. I must be careful because they may not respond, both of them, and say you didn't specify which one. But the DGs will rectify a small mistake, which we don't know what are its implications. If we just leave it as such. But having said so, today I'm in a very good mood, not to finish the meeting, but to allow you to speak on behalf of the department on what is the department's take on the proposed bill. Let me say, honorable members, today I beg you, I plead with you, ngiyanicela, ngiyanxusa. My Afrikaans is not working for now. When it comes back, I will. We'll only be asking questions of clarity. Only. Only. Next week, we will be discussing on what do we do or what do we say as the committee. Because the bill is proposed to the committee, the department will give us what is their view, their side, we then ask their questions of clarity. Our comments specifically on the bill, but it doesn't take away to comment on what they would have presented as a department. But the issue on the table is a proposed private members bill, not the response of the department. The response of the department help us to have, because they must be given an opportunity, because it's a bill that by executive authority they will be expected to ensure its application. So today we will only ask questions of clarity. Then we will have our own discussions on what do we say on the bill, and then make recommendations. Probably, I hope at some point we'll also get a chance when we meet either next week on what could be the processes that the committee can undertake, having finalized. You see, the problem, Honorable Malinga, is I don't know, but when I look at Ariko, he seems to be a little bit grayer than you. So there is a time where you might feel more hotter than you feel. I can see Honorable Malinga is feeling cold. So I don't know what's happening in between. Try to find something mid-colonial age. So we will give it to the department and then we'll ask questions of clarity. Babu Makeba and Babu Mkwai.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you once again for inviting our Minister to come and present as per the contextual background that the Honorable Chairperson has provided. Let me, Chair, start by first apologizing for our Minister's absence this morning due to an emergency that he had to attend to. He was going to attend this meeting as per the preparation for this meeting last week until an emergency occurred this morning. Furthermore, Chair, as we have indicated again, we are moving slowly to get used into the correct terminology and language. We should have mastered that by now. I apologize. We are a Department of Minerals, Resources and Energy, not just energy. We apologize for the wrong title there. Chair, I was going to do the outline, but you have already made our work much easier by providing some contextual background as to why today you have also invited us as a department to reflect on the proposed bill that we received in the other meeting that we had here. So I wouldn't like to then repeat what you have just said, Chair, but we will focus on the current industry structure that we currently have in the country, particularly with reference to Eskom, and then we'll problematize the statement and then look into the independent electricity management bill and provide an overview. And I must indicate, Chair, that's the department's view, having gone through the content that we have received, and then reflect on other discussion on the industry structure that currently exists, obviously provide a view on the bill itself and make some recommendations. This is just a technical department's overview of what we have received and the comments thereof. So that's what we're going to do as per the request that we have received. And I'll ask Mr. Odat to do the technical presentation for this committee this morning, with your permission.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning, the two DGs from Mineral Resources and Energy. My name is Thabang Odet. I've been tasked to go through the technical aspects of the IEMO bill, as was discussed at the previous committee meeting. My focus is on the technical content of the bill and nothing beyond that. The presentation is short, about 9 or 10 slides, which Chair will go through the few SDGs outlined. The purpose, obviously, is to respond to the IEMO in a technical manner, to provide an overview of the challenges, at least as we see them from the department's point of view. And we will summarize those in a problem statement. Chair, you might be aware that there's also other work that is being done in government to look at the structure of the electricity supply industry. So in our presentation, we'll also make reference to those other pieces of work that is being done outside this committee. And at the end, we'll make a recommendation on what we think is the way forward. Chair, I would like to start with a short background. That in 2012, we undertook a similar exercise as a department. At that time, there were certain challenges that were imminent in the industry. We proposed a bill in 2011, submitted to Parliament in 2012. The ISMO bill was formally withdrawn in 2014. As part of this work, Chair, we did some detailed technical work to understand the impact on ESCOM at that time, more especially on relocating the transmission assets into ISMO, looking at the legal and the financial impact on ESCOM. Chair, we must mention that the challenges that were prevailing in the electricity supply industry about 8 years ago are still, they still persist even today. So this is a short background that we give. The current structure, Chair, those that are not aware, you have ESCOM being a dominant player in the electricity supply industry. They dominate 90% of electricity production. The other 10% is shared between the IPPs as well as some imports from the neighboring countries. ESCOM owns 100% of the transmission with those three functions as outlined. In terms of retail, this is your end use part of the value chain. ESCOM dominates in terms of revenue. 60% of the revenue derived from retail accrues to ESCOM, and ESCOM owns approximately 40% of the asset value. Municipalities also play a role in the retail sector. They own about 60% of the asset value, and 40% of the revenue accrues to municipalities. Chair, perhaps it's important to also mention that the reticulation functions of the municipalities is provided for in the Constitution. Schedule 4, Part B of the Constitution states that municipalities are given the powers to reticulate electricity and gas. I will come back to that point at a later stage. The problem statement, we have gazetted an update of the integrated resource plan. According to this plan, there is a definite urgent need for new generation capacity. Meaning that the current fleet of generators needs to be augmented if we are to meet our increasing electricity demand. Assuming that this new capacity is procured under the current ESCOM structure, there are a number of requirements that ESCOM has already indicated. First, if ESCOM builds, they would need be able to raise capital. And they do that in two ways, either through government equity injections or going to the market and raising additional debt. If the IPP builds, the difference here is that the CAPEX part of the power plant is the funding for that is raised by an IPP. ESCOM also incurs debts in that they need to strengthen the grid infrastructure to some extent. ESCOM also requires tariff increases because this is the source of revenue. So if they put in more capital on the building side, they need to be allowed to recover more revenue in order so that they can pay back the capital that has been injected. Thirdly, government support in terms of guarantees in any power purchase agreements that have been entered to date. Government has stood behind those in a form of a support. So these three sub-bullet points under item number 2 are what ESCOM will require if we are to build the IRP generation capacity. Now, we need to be cognizant that the government is trying by all means to minimize its exposure especially in relation to these projects, new projects. And one of the ways to do that is to mobilize the private funding. The question still needs to be answered as to how best the government should do that, in partnership or through IPPs alone. It's a question that remains to be answered. In turn, the private sector indicates that they require a level playing field. In other words, they say Eskom as the dominator in the market is not conducive for them to invest sufficient capital. I must indicate that there have been investments by private sector under the current Eskom structure. We believe that the current policy framework to some extent supports private investments. There are gaps that needs to be closed, and I would like to put it that some of the provisions that are indicated in the IEMO bill is, you know, proposed to be attempting to resolve those gaps. But we'll go into the detailed discussions around IEMO bill. The fourth point is that the increase in tariffs, as we are all aware, has quite a negative impact on the economy, the growth of the economy. To date, there has been escalating electricity tariffs. Year on year, Eskom puts an application to the regulator requiring tariffs to be increased. But we believe that there are other mechanisms that we can deploy to manage such steep increases in tariffs. The current rates are obviously not supportive of economic growth. Since 2012, Chair, what has happened? The current Eskom fleet, in terms of the power plants that Eskom operates, their performance has deteriorated. We're currently sitting at about 60% of the energy availability factor. This is, if you look at a plant that is meant to produce 100 megawatts, it's now producing 60 megawatts due to various reasons, among them being poor maintenance history. In the IRP, we projected energy availability of about 71 to 75%. Now we are sitting at 60%. Obviously, then there is a gap in terms of the generation capacity that we have. The cost of coal has been escalating. This is a major input into Eskom's tariff application. So if this major cost keep on escalating, Eskom has no choice but to ask for higher tariffs in order for them to cover the cost. As I've said, the private sector has been investing. We have about 6,400 megawatts of renewable IPPs since 2012 to date that has been connected to the grid. Fourthly, the financial position of Eskom has worsened. Eskom requires more government support in order to continue operating. The IRP 2019 states very clearly that we need to put in more capacity in the next 10 years. So by 2030, we should be investing in more generation capacity. Now, getting to the ISMO bill, Chair, having given that background, we have analyzed, in our view, our technical view, some of the provisions of the bill. And I will touch only on two, what it seeks to do, what the IEMO seeks to do, and secondly, the objectives. And these are verbatim from the bill itself. Maybe the first point, Chair, to mention is that this bill builds on the ISMO bill, the 2012. Obviously, there are certain changes that are now being proposed. And let me get into the details then of the bill. What it seeks to do, it seeks to open up the electricity generation market, right, to other stakeholders besides Eskom. Two, it wants to give IPPs opportunity to have access to the electricity market. It claims that the same access that Eskom has. Three, transfer the risk of power plant construction and operation to IPPs. In other words, if you had an IPP building in Lupio Kusile, any cost escalation in relation to the capital expenditure would be limited and restricted to what the contract has been agreed to. Whereas under the current bill, you know, any cost escalations are translated into cost into Eskom and higher tariffs. And fourthly, which is the last point I want to raise in terms of what it seeks to do, is that it wants to provide an independent dispatch of generators. So in other words, Chair, if you have a fleet of about 20 generators, the bill is proposing that the dispatch of those 20 generators must be done by an independent party that does not own any of the generators. The object of the bill, by and large, and this is at the higher level, it seeks to provide for the incorporation of IEMO as a private company. And I'll get back to the private company issue. This company should be financially viable, and it will be able to manage the electricity system in an efficient manner. Will act as a trader of electricity, will assist the department in the, I assume the department, in the planning of electricity supply and transmission. Will establish a maintenance practice, efficient dispatch, as well as allow metropolitan municipalities to purchase electricity directly from electricity generators in other instances. Those are the high-level assessment of the IEMO bill as it stands. The next slide, Chair, as I've indicated in my opening, that there's work that is being done outside the IEMO work, and I want to highlight this is one key document that has been released by our sister department, and this is the ESCOM roadmap document. What is clear from the document is that it proposes some changes within ESCOM, and the objective of these proposals is to make ESCOM to be more efficient state company. It proposes that ESCOM must be internally within ESCOM created into three subsidiaries, with ESCOM holding as the holding company. It proposes, secondly, the formation of a transmission entity, which obviously will also be under ESCOM holdings. And the objective of this is that it will foster competitive market and encourage the use of diverse energy sources. It also gives consideration to creation of two or more generation subsidiaries. And the idea is that these subsidiaries, generation subsidiaries, should be allowed to compete to sell the power to the end user through the transmission entity. And the last point there is the bill allow for ESCOM to participate in the renewable generation program. So that's just the summary, Chair, of the other work that is being done outside the IEMO bill. Now, we have developed a view as a department on the IEMO bill, and I'm coming back to the private company issue. This is problematic in that the functions that the IEMO will perform are similar to the mandate of the minister under the Electricity Regulation Act. So if the bill goes as it is, either the Electricity Regulation Act must be amended to remove those functions and place them elsewhere, or the IEMO bill, insofar as it relates to those functions, must be amended, given consideration that the Electricity Regulation Act already covers those functions. Clause 3.1.C explicitly excludes the state as a shareholder, and this is very explicit in that the proposal is that the IEMO must be a private company with private shareholders. The bill creates creates a private company to execute a public function. It seeks to transfer ESCOM assets and the employees responsible for these assets to a private company. It proposes to recover operational costs from tariffs, fees, and charges to customers, electricity customers, that is. And the last point there that we want to raise is that it provides for IEMO, the bill, to choose customers for special tariffs. In other words, if you look at certain class of customers, what the bill is proposing is that IEMO can decide that these classes of customers will be charged this tariff, whereas the other ones can be charged this tariff. And it says IEMO, at its discretion, all that they need to do is to publish the list of those type of customers and the associated tariffs. Our view on IEMO is that it seeks to treat municipalities differently. It makes a specific reference to metros without saying much about the other municipalities which are not metros. It seeks to take over control of distribution and reticulation from municipalities. As I've said before, Schedule 4, Part B of the Constitution provides that municipalities must execute reticulation function of electricity and gas. The last point that we want to raise, Chair, before we go to recommendation, is that the bill proposes that IEMO as a company must have 10 directors in its board, 5 of whom must be appointed by the minister and the other 5 by private shareholders. However, there is no clear relationship between private shareholders and the minister. So one can anticipate that at the board level, there might be a bit of a tussle back and forth. Our recommendation, Chair, which is my last slide, is that in its current format, IEMO bill should be reconsidered as it goes against other existing legislation. I've mentioned the Electricity Regulation Act. I've also mentioned the Constitution. Second recommendation is that this matter must be taken back to Cabinet and certain departments of government must be allowed to do detailed analysis of how best to resolve the current challenges. The third point, Chair, that I want to raise is that we are in a process of amending the Electricity Regulation Act as part of the process to ensure alignment with the ESCOM roadmap paper. And that work, Chair, will be soon coming to this committee for discussions. And we are proposing that in that work that there must be alignment, at least at government level, of what the Electricity Regulation Act amendment will seek to provide, as well as what's contained in the ESCOM roadmap document. And Chair, that's my last point. Thank you. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. That's the gist and the reflection on the submission that we received and the comments that we went through in analyzing the document that we have had. And that concludes our submission to the committee, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, JLRE. Welcome, Babu Nyanzo. You're welcome. Honorable Olmaran, we apologize for starting before you arrived, but you arrived on time. You're welcome. Babum Tenja, you are next to me now. Quite soon, one by one, I'll be calling you next to me, those who are making my life difficult. It's just a start. You're welcome, Babum Tenja. Okay. Having said so, honorable members, any questions of clarity? Honorable Mylan, you'll bear with me, honorable members. I sometimes read this name where I speak, but one day I'll make it proper. Honorable Phillips, I got the emotion managers within the way. Okay. Honorable Mumalo, Honorable Mylam, Honorable Phillips, and then, one goes Malang. Oh. Honorable Maling, then Honorable Tenja. yenza amasimu iza 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 zwethu
thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to colleagues and colleagues from the department. Maybe my question will firstly reflect on your introduction or background before you get to the e-mobile. As to, can we get a clarity as to why there has not been sufficient maintenance on the on these plans over the years? Because subsequent to that is what we are experiencing as the country. And it cannot be that we just speak on that and say there's no maintenance. Why has there not been sufficient maintenance on the plans? And that is what we have been landed as a country. I don't want to say it now, because it's not discussion for now. You know, the thing is, my observations here on the bill on page 12, I don't know, maybe I'd be barking on the wrong tree if I were to ask these questions. Maybe I should have asked the person who presented the bill rather than the department's observations of what they think the bill is of. But maybe the on clause 3.1 of C explicitly excludes the state as a shareholder. So therefore, this therefore says that this is a roadmap to privatize Eskom. Is it a roadmap to include a partnership with private owners or just strip the state of the responsibilities of supplying energy? Is that what we are saying here? But it does, in a way, says that it seeks to transfer Eskom's assets and employees for these functions to the private company. Now, what does the department or government's responsibility thereof remains with when it comes to energy distribution, generation, and further on if we were to accept this form of a bill? But like I said earlier, you will bear with me, I might be barking at the wrong tree. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a number of questions. Let me start with slide 5. Mr. Odette, you talk about the ISMO bill and how it was formally withdrawn in March 2014. And at the time it was withdrawn, President Zuma said in the State of the Nation address that this bill was critical to the future of energy security in South Africa and that it would be reintroduced shortly. Those were his words. So my question to you is, why was it withdrawn and why has it not been reintroduced, given that that is a direct function of the Department of Energy? The next question goes to slide 11. You're putting forward hypotheticals. The roadmap for Eskom has not been approved. It has not been presented to anyone. It's a discussion document at this point. All we can discuss right now is the bill that is before us. So this hypothetical two generation subsidiaries, the only person who's mentioned it, as far as I'm aware, and maybe you could help me out here, and this is the clarity that I'm seeking, Chair, is the two generation entities. The only person who's mentioned this at any point is Minister Mantashe, and he has been extremely harshly criticized for it by everybody. The President hasn't mentioned it, Cabinet hasn't mentioned it. So where does this idea come from? And further, how will intra-company competition reduce prices, reduce tariffs? Because the problem that we face in South Africa is the high cost of electricity. So what we're doing is saying, well, we're going to create another Eskom. So how can that help the problem that we face? given that government will be required to fund the capital build of that new generation entity that you're talking about. It's utter madness as far as I can tell. Then on slide 12, let's talk about the various bullet points here. You say the EMO bill is problematic in that the functions that EMO will perform are similar to the mandate of the minister under the Electricity Regulation Act. Can you point to me in the Electricity Regulation Act which functions of the minister, which are regulatory in nature, are similar to the functions that EMO, which are transmission, they're not distribution, which are essentially a transmission function, how that is similar to the functions of the minister's mandate under the ERA? Which sections specifically of the ERA? I won't comment on clause 31C, that's for discussion when we discuss it, Chair. But I do think that the department is misleading us a little bit here, because when Honourable Mazzoni presented the bill, this issue was raised about a private company. She said this is more along the lines of a private-public partnership where the state has half the control of the board and the private sector has input because of their expertise financial resources. So I think we need to be careful about misleading there. I just want to ask about the proposal to the second last bullet point on that slide, where it talks to the proposal to recover operational costs from tariffs, fees, and charges to customers. And I don't understand why that is an issue. I mean, that's what ESCOM's transmission function does already. Why is that a problem? Also, the last bullet point, why is that a problem? We already have special tariffs for certain customers. Now, I get that it's at its discretion, but the board is a public-private partnership as proposed in the bill. So why is this a problem? I mean, five of the board members will be chosen by the minister. The chairperson of the board, who will have a deciding vote, is chosen by the minister. Why is this a problem? I really don't understand it. On the next slide, the only time this bill talks about metropolitan municipalities is in the context of an exemption, in that it allows metropolitan municipalities to purchase directly from IPPs where they have the capacity and capability to do so. It does not at any point, as far as I can tell, and this is what I'd like clarity on, say that the EMO will take over the distribution function of municipalities. So can you please point me to where it says that? And where it in any other way differentiates between a metropolitan municipality who is a customer and a local municipality who is a customer. All it says, as far as I can tell, is that they are permitted where they have the capacity to purchase directly from IPPs. I've already spoken to the board of directors thing, but is that not a control mechanism, and does that not foster the independence that we seek from EMO? My last question, Chair, is on slide 14, and it's the first numbered point there. Where exactly does this bill go against existing legislation, and where exactly does it go against the Constitution? You mentioned Schedule 4B, which talks about municipal reticulation and distribution, and as far as I can tell, there is absolutely nothing in this bill that says that the EMO will take over municipal reticulation and distribution. So I'd welcome clarity on that. Thank you, Chair.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. My colleague has covered most of my questions. I just want to actually expand on one of the previous questions about the maintenance. Everybody accepts that maintenance wasn't done. But who exactly is going to be held responsible for this? surely there must be somebody that needs to actually be held responsible for this lack of maintenance. We can't just say, oh, there was no maintenance, shame. It's time for us to actually hold people accountable, and I think that that's one of the things we should do. But all my other questions are already covered. Thank you so much.
Let me welcome a presentation at department. Though DGs, I am also not happy with the work done here. Because now I'm inconvenient. Chairperson, mine is just that while Tina we are busy hoping between ISMO, IMO and Cabinet to establish or to direct some directorates to deal with the energy, but the energy supply of the country is under threat. And as the department that is entrusted with ensuring that there is sufficient energy supply in the country, seemingly we are dragging our feet. I do not agree with the IMO, but we will discuss that next week, tomorrow. But at the same time, you are not advancing what should happen should this IMO bill fall off. You're not advancing what should happen as a department, because like ngiyaqala ukuvumelana nomlungu loya melem share ukuthi sikhuluma ngento engekho Eskom roadmap, because kahle kahle thina our hands are tied, because siphethe energy but Eskom lesihlukumezayo asikwazi ukukhuluma ngayo because it belongs into another department. So I don't get it though. Why this immobile needs to happen, because IRP also includes the IPPs. Why should as a committee should we agree to this? Or are we not satisfied as a committee chair that the IRP will yield the results that we want from the IRP? Public, ikhona, but I don't see it working. This triple P, the minister has five, the other people have five. You're the person who holds the power to secure energy in the country. You don't know where the other five will come from. Are they going to put in CVs, or what is it that is going to happen? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you also the department concerning this issue here. Chairperson, there are a lot of things here. Actually, there are a lot to be desired here. A lot of things that is not correct about this so-called IMO bill and all those things. At least I seem to agree fully with the department this time for rejecting this IMO. Well, but before I go further deep there, let me first begin by saying, Chairperson, I think the minister of this department, he seems to be adopting a certain habit of ignoring this committee. Because as far as I remember, last time there was an apology about him also being attending something, and then today also
he's apologizing that he can't be here and all those things. I think he must start to, he must begin to start us to take us serious, if indeed he wants us to take him serious as well. We cannot, as a committee, take these issues of a minister who's not responsible, because by him telling us that his apology is busy somewhere and what, we know he's supposed to come here, so he must come here. That is the first point I would make. But coming back to the main issue, the department is correct to reject this, because there are a lot to be desired, as I said earlier on. Lot and lot and lot. The fact that this thing was first rejected in around 2012. That was correct. You see, this thing, when we look at it, these are all the plans from people like Jamnandas. But now he's pushing it to us in the other angle. So you think we can't see.
Okay. Chair, my point of order is that you asked that we restrain ourselves to questions of clarity and that we have a discussion on the merits of the bill at our next meeting. I don't hear a question. I'm hearing a lot of commentary, but no question. Because I would also like to comment on the bill, but I restrained myself.
Let me say this. I requested you before I started the meeting. I said, can we deal with the issue in the meeting? Honorable Mylem is correct, but let me also say this. The reason I allowed Honorable to change our name. Sanuki Tazana, we are Honorable.
Sorry, dear.
Now, the reason I've allowed, maybe let's agree that it might have taken longer for Honorable Mutenjan. Members have laid the foundation why they were seeking a question of clarity. They started by saying, understanding 1, 2, 3, and being of the view that this is what it means, and then they came with questions. Yes, I agree to some degree. I'm still waiting for the question of clarity from Honorable Mutenjan. With the right at that phase, let's speak, what's the date? Next week, 26th. Don't finish your arguments today. Next week, 26th, we want the arguments for and against. So can you deal with the questions of clarity? 26th, the department won't be here. We will be on our own discussing now what does this mean. So that the reason I must say Honorable Intendant, I'm also avoiding that the department be dragged in. I will answer the other issues, because there were questions that I felt they were directed not to the department. They may not be able to answer from where I sit as a chair. I might have to answer those ones. Continue on, but let's focus more on questions of clarity on the presentation, and then we'll have discussion on what do we say and what do we do with the bill. I also said that probably we'll come back with options in front of the committee, and now I'm answering another question, in front of the committee to follow. For an example, it may not be just a question of if you succeed or whatever, rejecting and it ends there, or accepting and it ends there. There might be other processes which might require now even the attention of the House. We will present those options that are available for us to follow. So can we try and speak mostly on the questions of clarity?
Okay, thank you, Chair. No, Chairperson, in that case, well, this thing is clear by itself. I don't necessarily need to seek more clarity, except maybe to ask the department if it's possible, or if they think, or if they do think it's possible for ESCOM to also can come and become a, they are part of their
if Eskom can fall under the same department. That's the clarity.
Mr. Jelan, what does it mean?
Chair, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members, for clarity, seeking questions, and in some way some input as well on the presentation and the submission we have made. Chair, I would just like to deal with some few policy and structural issues that have been raised so that by the time Taiwan responds to other technical issues, those are cleared and are out of our way. Just to deal with the issue of maintenance, as the Honorable Member Nomalo has raised, Chair, Eskom falls directly within public enterprises, and its accountability relates to public enterprises, not to Department of Minerals and Energy. That is the current structural arrangement. So for all the work that is done for the maintenance of plants, for making sure that they are run efficiently and effectively to deliver on their maintenance, is the work of Eskom under the leadership of public enterprises. We are mainly focused on policy orientation insofar as that work is concerned. So that's the arrangement we have, which also maybe deals with the question that has been raised by Honorable Member about where exactly Eskom should be by Honorable Mtenja. So that's the current arrangement. So in terms of accountability, Honorable Phillips, and the maintenance, the responsibility lies with public enterprises. Of course, we do have an interest to make sure that our policy framework is accordingly implemented in what Eskom does. Hence, we also have a direct interaction with Eskom on various activities. But in terms of accountability, the maintenance part of it falls directly within Eskom and public enterprises. The other area which, Chair, I think we have also clarified from the beginning, we, as a department, were simply responding to submission made. We did not bring the bill to the committee. So we are not bringing any bill to the committee. We are responding on the submission that was made. So we are running two parallel processes in a way, and I think it's important to clarify that, because Honorable Malinga has raised that issue as well in terms of what are we doing in terms of our integrated resource plan. As a department, what we are currently doing, we are putting an implementation plan to deal with what has transpired on the integrated resource plan since it's been gazetted. We are putting an action plan to give effect into implementation. So that's a process that is running on its own. You will have seen that we have already gone out for requests for information about what we have already identified as a missing gap in terms of our energy supply of about 2,000 megawatts. That's the work that the department is doing as part of integrated resource plan. So it's not, Chair, like we are not doing anything insofar as giving effect into the implementation. We are doing a lot of work, and there will be a lot of determinations that the Minister, in terms of the Act, is empowered to do to give effect into the implementation of our integrated resource plan. So this process is running on its own as a private member's bill, where the department are continuing with our work as expected in terms of giving effect to the integrated results so that we can yield the results that are expected. So these are parallel processes, and they should not be conflated as we do the work that we're doing. And then I'll leave the other technical stuff to Mr. Odad to respond. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, DG. I would like to respond to the technical aspect raised in the immobile. Clause 3.1.C, as I've stated, it explicitly excludes government from being the shareholder. And Chair, our understanding of ownership of any company is that it does not reside in the board, it resides in the shareholders. So although the board provides for five members to be appointed by the minister, it's very explicit in that the ownership of the company shall be private. And that's what we are trying to raise in our presentation. The other aspect, the Eskom roadmap document, I think DG has covered that in that policy space where the document is and where it's going. Section 6 of the EMO bill provides that EMO shall be responsible for planning. When one reads that together with the Electricity Regulation Act, planning is solely the power afforded to the Minister of Energy. And this is the conflict that we are referring to when we say it conflicts with the Electricity Regulation Act. When one again reads Schedule 4, Part B, it provides that municipalities shall be responsible for reticulation, and it does not differentiate between a metro municipality and a non-metro municipality. However, when one reads the IEMO bill, it makes mention of a metropolitan municipalities in all instances where it's referring to municipalities, and it's mute as to other non-metro municipalities. And say when you read the constitution, it says reticulation is the function of the municipality. What the e-mobile is trying to do, it's trying to put certain conditions for a municipality to be able to, one, procure from private generators, two, and reticulate that power that has been procured. So the two must be read together. You can't propose a bill that is not aligned with what the constitution provides for. And Chair, that's what we're trying to highlight, that if one reads all of these documents together, there needs to be synergies amongst them. Chair, I want to head
course. I just want to ask very quickly. I missed where you said the reticulation part is referred to in the EMO bill.
So when one reads the EMO bill, it refers to purchasing of power by metros from IPPs. Now, our logic is that that power that is being purchased obviously is not purchased for the benefit of the municipality of the metro. It's going to be reticulated to the end user.
I don't understand, Jay. I really just don't understand.
Honorable member, let me start with this thing, because I can see you want to mess up the meeting. You know why I kept quiet? Simple procedure, and I'm not going to say this thing again. I'm saying it for the last time. Simple procedure of the meeting. You raise a hand, it's either as a point of order. I then give you recognition to speak. Let's end this thing that you just stand up and you just speak. The reason I keep quiet, and I will do this thing again. You stand up, you speak, I keep quiet, somebody responds, and speak, and I allow you to just go as you wish. When you are tired, you will then invite me to chair my meeting. That's just a very simple procedure. Two, the reason I was saying the department gives their own perspective. We don't have to subscribe to what they say. Let's assume they are wrong. We don't have to push them then to say something that is going to make us satisfied. We have a meeting on Tuesday or Wednesday. We will then discuss to say that perspective that the department is raising was completely wrong or confused, because this is what this means. Because it's giving you how they have looked at the presentation. It is then for us in the committee, when we debate, to clarify what we think is a misrepresentation of what we say. That's point two. Point three, can we allow the department to respond on what it says? We will deal after they've finished all the questions, then say, I need clarity again or as a follow-up. But if we sit here, the answers, and then I say, I'm not happy, come back, we'll end up having a dialogue.
Chairman, so, unhappy. I'm sorry.
Can I clarify what I'm responding, or should I allow you to now be in charge of the meeting? I'm saying, let's allow the department to respond. We will then ask for a follow-up where we are not satisfied or we are not clear with the answers. That's what I'm trying to say. Let's avoid it, because when he then answers the question of another member, we will then end up having to spend another time in that question of that member, because at that point he doesn't understand. But there's a difference also, not understanding or disputing the facts of what is being presented. So Those are two different things. Can you continue?
Yes, Chair. So what we are saying is our reading of the bill refers to procurement from IPPs. However, that power that is being procured is not procured for the benefit of the municipality itself. It will be reticulated to the end user. And this is the element that we are saying we need to be careful how we put up that text. Chair, there's also, perhaps it's outside the bill, attached to the bill, there is a document called Memorandum on Objects of the IEMO bill. And some of these clauses are contained in that attachment. It's one document in the bill as it was published. And Chair, I want to leave it at that in terms of our responses. Thanks.
Okay. Let me just answer a few things. One, we take point of what you raised, Honorable Mtenjan, with regard to the minister. But it doesn't take away. Probably when you've got the two digits, by the way, it doesn't take away that sometimes, let's say, the difference could be in the committee. We encourage ministers to attend committee meetings. But nothing stops us if we feel, out of what we are engaging the department on, that we are not satisfied. Now we need the executive authority to invite that and say, in this meeting, we will need you as the executive authority to be in the meeting. That's why then as a committee, you take serious steps. I take the point that attendance in meeting is very important by the executive authority. Even if you're showing face and say, this is what we do, it's a courtesy matter. But one thing for sure this committee can't shy away from is that if in our own view, we need the minister, that's when we can use the measure and say, this one requires that we talk to the political authority in the office and we want the minister to be present. That is one part. The second thing is that I think let's leave other issues for future reference. I want to raise those things when we discuss again next week, because there are issues that I felt that the department may not be able to respond to them. And I will state why I did not respond today. I'm avoiding a dialogue, or I'm avoiding a debate of next week being put in here. But some of the issues, the only thing that I would have thought, Honorable Intention, you could have answered that question, is the way that he put it. Sometimes he's a fighter. You see, when you are a fighter, you fight even when there is no opponent, but because you have to. He's a fighter. I think the question for me, it was from a different angle, was how much, before you responded, let's put it like that, I think that's what you wanted to say, how much consultation has been made with the affected entities, in particular ESCOM. So that I think that was the issue, to say this might be affecting more ESCOM. Has there been consultation in your own, not to say you needed to, but because some of the things might be touching that entity. Among other things, I will respond exactly on that matter, because I might have had a different understanding, but when we deal with some of the things raised, even in the meeting, I think I would have to deal with those issues. Any follow-ups, Honorable Mylem and then Honorable Nguman?
Chair, my first follow-up is I did not receive an answer as to why the ISMO bill was withdrawn and why it was not reintroduced. My second is that I'd really like some clarity from Mr. Odette about the issue about planning. Because if I read the function of EMO, subsection 6, it says they must model scenarios and provide the results of the modeling to the minister for the purpose of developing the IRP. It doesn't say that they must develop the IRP, it says that the minister. So I'm trying to understand why you think they are trying to take over the functions of the minister. So that's the first part. The second part, subsection 1b, says provide the necessary input for the development of the expansion plan by the transmitter as per the IRP. It doesn't at any point say that they must write the IRP or take over the planning function. It says they must provide input. So why do you think, in your opinion, they are taking over the function of the minister with regard to planning? Because I don't see that yet. That's that part. Then I'm very, very confused about your comment about when a metro buys electricity from an IPP, you say it's not for the benefit of the municipality. Whose benefit is it for? Why would they buy from an IPP if it's not to their benefit to buy from an IPP? And if they buy from an IPP, who's going to distribute that inside the municipality? They own the reticulation, so who's going to distribute that? I mean, all this bill, as I understand it, does is take over the wholesale function that is currently sitting on Eskom's national grid. Now, please help me understand this, because I'm very, very confused as to why you, who are a technical expert, would think that EMO is going to in some way take over the function of selling electricity to the end user. If they purchase from an IPP and they sell it to an end user, they are the distributor. So how is EMO taking over that function? I can't get my head around where you're coming from. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Well, I've got one question. It's a follow-up to my first question. Why there has not been sufficient maintenance on the plant? I think Ndabezit, if I'm not mistaken, correctly put it to say that it is the function of the Public Enterprises Department. Now, the question would be, therefore, I'm not putting you on the spot, Ndabezit, through you, Chair, but I'm trying to ask the question that says, are we therefore saying that after all these years and what we are experiencing as a country in terms of Eskom and electricity, the crisis we find ourselves in is the reason emanates from the public enterprises, from that department? Number two, on the same question would be, what is the thinking of the relevance of public enterprises having all these, okay, let's just focus on energy, rather than having the functions of the energy in this particular department, rather than having it in public enterprises? Because from what you have said, if I understood you correctly, it would mean that public enterprises has been the one that has been failing the country all along. Subsequent to that is the experiences of load shedding and the grids and whatever that is happening. So I just want to get you thinking around that. Yes, I was.
Why? But they will answer, I'm a very fair democratic chairperson. The truth of the matter is that we are dealing with a proposed bill, not the crisis at Eskom. I wonder so that public enterprise tomorrow does not come here and say, why were you discussing a matter that we are dealing with at public enterprise? So the issue, the reason it's is that you want now to even talk on a matter that they don't have a discretion. The distribution of departments and task and institution is the sole prerogative of the president. Now, how departments, but as I said, I can't protect them. If they want to enter that terrain, I want them to go there voluntarily. I can't sit here and say don't answer. They will answer if they want to. But as I said, I'm fair.
I think, Honourable Chair, and thanks, Zwide, for that very controversial raised matter. And I think the Chair is absolutely correct. It's a structural arrangement that we have no control over. But when there's performance challenges, as Energy Department, we are expected to make sure that, as I've said earlier on, that some improvements are also geared towards the performance of Eskom. For example, the poor performance of Eskom, if it continues and certain commitments made by Eskom, they will have a direct net effect on our integrated resource plan, to a point that we may have to review certain decisions that have been taken. So there is an interconnectedness of the work that is performed at Eskom to the work that is performed at the Department of Minerals and Energy. So the synergy, therefore, is very important to be striked in working with Eskom whilst it falls under public enterprises. So, Chair, our view is not to say Eskom is sitting at DPE, so it's got nothing to do with Department of Minerals and Energy. We engage, even when we're developing the integrated resource plan, the team was integrated, including DPE. So that's a kind of working arrangement we have. When Eskom fails, we also fail. So we have a vested interest to make sure that Eskom doesn't fail. It performs because it meets some of the obligations we have from a policy perspective or point of view. But the alignment is a structural thing that I have no powers to comment on that and the rationale for what it is for now. Our responsibility is to make sure our work is aligned, whichever way it takes. Thanks,
Thanks, PG. I would like to respond to one question only. The question that I think maybe I need to respond in more detail is in relation to the municipal functions. And with the permission of the DG, I would like to give that response in more detail, because it's not only looking at the bill, EMO in isolation, cross-references with the Electricity Regulation Act, with the Constitution. And I think for us to have a meaningful discussion, we need to respond in detail in that. But where I'm going to respond today is the planning function. When one reads the Electricity Regulation Act, it provides that it's the Minister of Energy. How he does it, it's his call. What the IEMO is proposing is now wanting to direct how he should do it by saying he should get inputs from this new private company that will be created. And that's the part that I'm raising, that it conflicts with the mandate of the Minister of Energy. Chair, I'll stop at that point.
There is a question about withdrawing and reintroduce. Chair, that's not the work of the department. When parliaments decide to withdraw a bill, that's beyond our control. We have no responsibility over that. If it gets reintroduced by anybody like parliament, our work as the department will be to act appropriately.
Okay. Honourable members, no, I'm not going to give you honourables my lens. For one reason, we don't have to debate with the department. No, we're not going to debate with the department. We're not going to debate with the department. We're not going to look for answers that are going to say that the department is giving us what they think. They're not thinking for us. Next week, Wednesday, if in what you want to raise is related to the department,
we will tackle it with the department and say we have not been able to deal with this issue. And then as a committee, we'll seek further clarity on the matter. I don't want us to exhaust as if we want, no, I will give you and see whether what you ask is not for the department to make you understand. I'm saying the duty of the department is not to make any of these members to understand. They are giving us their perspective. We have a right to reject or accept what they say. Debate in the committee. In the committee, we don't have to debate whether we agree with the department or we disagree. We have to debate the bill that is presented to us. If we agree with the bill presented to us, we will give reasons why we do so. If we don't agree, we will also give reasons why we don't agree with what they say. Can we then allow the department, because it has given us their own perspective? Let me hear what you want to say, Honorable Maila.
Chair, I'm not trying to debate at all, but the department is here now, and they've raised certain issues, and our part of our job in processing this bill is to solicit the information we need from them to process it effectively. So there are things that they've answered or half answered that I don't have clarity on. I'll give you an example. Mr. Odette said a minute ago, he said that the function of planning is the function of the minister in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act. I've just done a quick search right now on the Electricity Regulation Act, and I can't find it. So I'm trying to understand. Chair, can I just finish?
Wait, you don't, you are not going to. Let me. It's your duty when you come to the committee next week to say what the department is raising. We can't find it in the Constitution. It's your duty as a member of the committee. Based on that, we then decide as a committee what to do. We are not dealing with the department that presented the bill to us. We have a right to dispute what the department says. That's the point I'm trying to close.
Chair, no, can I clarify my comment to you? Is that they made a statement. They made a statement and said that this bill that is on the table contradicts the minister's function as in the Electricity Regulation Act. Now, I'm trying to understand, because that's their opinion. I'm just trying to understand, because I don't know where it's coming from, and I'm trying to understand why they are making that statement.
But can I help you, Honorable?
I'm not debating them. I just want to know why.
But they've answered you twice.
But they haven't shown me
which. No, but can you? They answered you twice. You're still not clear.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's not for them to make you clear, because what they give you is not what is factually correct. It's for you then to go to the committee and argue that what they raise is factually incorrect. Don't assume that these members may not be able to find it for you when you debate and say, if you look on section so-and-so of the Constitution, we agree the department is correct. It's for you as members of the committee. They are not advisors of the committee. They are giving us, we are giving them a chance to say, what is your take? Finally, you are members of parliament. Take responsibility for your work. Convince each other in the committee. Can you please put that to rest? If that issue arises in your debate in the committee, you will then say, we still can't find this matter that the department has raised. But it can't be for you. It must be for the committee. So the committee will discuss even your dissatisfaction with the answers by the department. So duty of the committee to discuss it. You are bizarre yourself. Once you start to have an attitude to me, I can change within a second. And I told you, it's not for the first time. This committee is not about you. You can't say, one time you complained in this committee with a comment that was made, a gesture. You are doing exactly that now.
What am I doing, Chair?
No, you are doing, what do you mean when I speak and say that's this bizarre?
Chair, if I can respond to you?
No, you are not going to respond.
Chairperson,
no, I don't need your assistance.
Chairperson,
can you close your mic? Can you close your mic? Can you close your mic and tell you?
Okay.
All that I ask, let's deal with this other with respect. Let's deal with this other with respect. And I'm a chair. I respect everyone in this committee. But if there's going to be one person who feels, because I'm beginning to take it personal, that somebody sits here undermines even anyone here. I don't have a problem when there's a grievance. If a member has got a concern how I chair the meeting, we know what is the procedures of Parliament to follow. To the department, thank you very much. Take note, passes the concerns that was raised by the committee about the issue of attendance by the minister. Thank you very much. Honourable members, where is the event? Honourable members, we are meeting again tomorrow at 10 o'clock, committee room 2, ne?
Yes,
committee room 2, dealing with international agreement. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow at 10.